Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 13th and only 13th episode of Tavern Tussle. Have you ever wanted to change into anyone you wanted to? Have you ever wanted to play a golem constructed for war? Have you ever wanted to be either of those things and also be a sky pirate? Well, we're going to talk about that this week on Tavern Tussle. Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen. It is I, Cam Bams, and this week, I am all alone. Welcome to the 13th episode of Tavern Tussle. This week has been a week of ups and downs. It's been a week of shock and amazement and anticipation and so forth. But before we get into the news and the happenings and the meat of our episode, let's talk about new campaigns. Let's talk about how level 1 is probably the deadliest level in all of Dungeons & Dragons. Last week we started a new game. Karateka is DMing. It's Curse of Strahd. I think he started out wonderfully. It was very unique. He didn't just, you know, drop us in Barovia right away. It was good. It was really good. We were going through Death House. Of course, we started level 1, so we went through Death House, and we lost 2 party members. Like, it was ridiculous. Like, it was shocking, and I did not expect it. I don't think anyone expected it, really. But yeah, we lost 2 people. Andy, who you've heard on the show before and we've talked about, lost his half-orc rogue without really even getting to play him at all. So that was cool. And then another one of our friends, another Andrew, lost his dragonborn sorcerer named Grugel. So, yeah, Curse of Strahd is no joke. Level 1 is deadly, and we learned that firsthand. So, there we go. Just be careful. Think about what you're doing before you do it. And it happens, you know? Like, it's never good. I mean, it's worse when a character dies and you played it forever, and then you get attached, and you're like, oh man, my character's gone. But it's almost a little worse when you're so excited for a character, and then you never get to play it because it dies within the first 2 hours of the campaign. So that sucks. But Andy's excited because a new race might have come out that he's really excited about that we'll get into. But yeah, we didn't play Andy's game this week just because he got stuck in Vegas. But hey, if you're going to get stuck anywhere in the United States, you might as well get stuck in Vegas, because why the fuck not? So yeah, this week has had an announcement of sorts. So 2 new settings got announced for D&D. The first one is coming out November 20th, and that is The Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica. Now, Ravnica is a setting in the Magic the Gathering universe. So they're actually crossing the streams, Wizard is. So you're going to be able to play your Dungeons and Dragons in your Magic the Gathering game space. I have not played Magic the Gathering enough to know about Ravnica. I don't have any way of knowing what Ravnica is all about. Apparently, there's a lot of guilds, because it's called The Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica. So, there's that. Yeah, you'll be able to get your hands on that, along with an additional... they're releasing a map pack, I think. Like, maps and stuff. And a dice set. Also on November 20th. So, if you're into Magic the Gathering and you're into D&D, then... hey, this was made for you. I mean, I'm going to pick it up anyway, just because it's... a D&D product, and I do a podcast about D&D, so it's gonna have to happen. But if you don't want to wait until then, guess what? The second setting they announced, it's out right now. You can buy The Wayfinder's Guide to Eberron on D&D Beyond or the DM's Guild for just $19.99. And oh yes, we did. We got it. We're excited. I mean, I've been reading it since it came out. It's good. There's so much in Eberron. It's such a good setting. And they revamped it, brought it to 5th edition, changed some things from earlier editions, and it's just so good. Like, I'm so excited. Like, Eberron is one of my favorite settings. So the fact, it's not really a full release book. It's not, you know, the $50 hardbound book. It's only digital or PDF kind of thing. But there's just so much already out for Eberron. It makes sense they did it this way. It makes sense for it to be a PDF or a digital D&D Beyond, you know, supplement, because you can still use the stuff from 3.5, you can still use the stuff from 4th and 5th. Like, the information is still there. You know, Eberron is still Eberron. It still feels that way. And this coming out has not helped my itch to want a D&D game by any means. My fiance has had to talk me out of it over and over. She's like, you're playing too much. And I'm like, I can't play too much. I just can't. But yeah. So you may ask yourself, what is Eberron? So Eberron, to me, let's first get one major, major fact out of the way before we dive into anything else. In Eberron, magic exists, but it's not the high fantasy magic you're used to in most D&D settings. Magic in Eberron is more of a science, in that there's no real, like, heavy resurrection. There's no, like, teleportation magic. They use magic in a way that we used science to progress. Like, they have a lightning rail. They have skyships. These things work through magic and bound elementals and stuff like that. So magic is taken in a different sense in this setting than it would be in a normal setting like the Forgotten Realms or Ravenloft or something like that. It's very, very different. And just diving into that makes you think differently about, you know, the way the classes work, the way that people interact with certain classes in the world and everything. It's just, it's interesting and I like it. And it's not new because Eberron's been around forever, but it's refreshing from the settings we have in 5th edition right now. It's just something different that's, you know, now published and released and ready to go. Eberron is also like the pulp adventure, you know, like you're out and you're swashbuckling, you're in skyships, you're diving into ancient ruins of cities that were blown up by a thing called the Morning that no one knows who did it or how it happened, but it happened. And there was a war where there were 5 nations all fighting each other, but now it's like at a Cold War stage, and there's all this adventure and, you know, things left over from the war that you can dive into. It's, I mean, I want to say it's very like, let's see, if you've ever played the Tomb Raider games or like stuff like that, it's very action heavy when it wants to be. But at the same time, there's like a layer to it that's like a noir film. Like, evil is not the only evil in Eberron, if that makes sense. Especially, it gets very political in Eberron because the war did just end not too long ago. And the whole world is kind of like in a Cold War state. And people are being driven by baser instincts and greed and the lust for power and such. So, yeah, you may dive into those ruins to kill the necromancer that's raising this being. But then you come to find out that this being is like a peace seeker and has information on the Morning kind of thing. And you just killed the necromancer, so now you'll never know, because he was actually the good guy, but someone hired you to kill him. And It's weird.
It's exciting and weird, and you can tell I'm excited. But yeah, Eberron takes place in the world of Corvair, and this week I'm just going to get into, it's going to be a short episode because it is only me. I'm going to get into the new races. I'm going to touch on some different things that change the game on a mechanical level kind of thing. And then next week, when Karateka returns, we will dive deep, deep into the lore and the story of Eberron. So look forward to that. So yeah, so let's just dive into these new races, because new races are always fun, and the races of Eberron are especially exciting. First of which is the Changeling. Now, Changelings are very cool. They're basically a different kind of doppelganger to an extent. I don't know if any of you ever played doppelgangers in 3.5. I did for a bit. I always walked around as Chuck Norris, because why the fuck not? But yeah, so let's get into the mechanics of a Changeling. So Changeling, your charisma score increases by 2, and your dexterity or your intelligence increases by 1. So you can already see where they can fit into, you know, optimal classes on a lot of states. They're good for sorcerers, bards, paladins, and of course, you know, dexterity or intelligence if you wanted to play a Changeling, you know, wizard, ranger, rogue, monk, that kind of thing. What really sets the Changelings apart is their change appearance. So I'm going to read this to you because it does kind of get a little iffy for some people. So, as an action, you can transform your appearance to revert to your natural form. You can't duplicate the appearance of a creature you've never seen, and you revert to your natural form if you die. So, basically, as an action, you change or revert. So revert is also an action, so that might come up in combat kind of thing. The key thing is you decide what you look like, including your height, weight, facial features, the sound of your voice, coloration of hair length, sex, and any other distinguishing characteristics. You can make yourself appear as a member of another race, though none of your game statistics change. So that's important, because you can't change into a half-orc and all of a sudden, you know, get half-orc resilience or any of that stuff. You also can't appear as a creature that is a different size than you, and your basic state stays the same. So if you're bipedal, you can't use this trait to become quadrupedal, for instance. Your clothing and other equipment don't change in appearance, size, or shape to match your new form, requiring you to keep extra outfits on hand to make the most compelling disguise possible. That is the kicker. That's why I was reading fast, because I wanted to get to that part. So you change, but unlike a disguise self spell, unlike a druid who shifts into an animal form, your stuff does not change. That's extremely important. And a lot of people are going to either pass that part over because it's the end of the paragraph, or they're not going to realize that. And that can get really, really sticky in some situations. So yeah, so you do get advantage on deception checks to avoid detection when you are changed, even though your stuff doesn't change, but whatever. You also get proficiency with 2 skills as a Changeling. You can choose from deception, intimidation, insight, or persuasion. So all that. You also get an ability called Unsettling Visage. When a creature you can see makes an attack roll against you, you can use your reaction to impose disadvantage on the roll. You must use this feature before knowing whether the attack hits or misses. Using this trait reveals your shape-shifting nature to any creature within 30 feet that can see you. And then you can only use this once per short or long rest. So yeah, so that's automatically, you know, you get a Bloodhunter's Blood Malic for free once a rest. And that's pretty cool, because why not? When you're at 1 hit point and then that ogre's about to slam you with that club, you might as well do it, because
what's the worst that could happen? You're going to die anyway. So, yeah. You also get Divergent Persona. So, you gain proficiency with one toll of your choice. So, you know, Alchemist Kid, stuff like that. Ooh, I wonder if you could use Thieves' Tools. I mean, why the fuck not? Yeah, why not? With one tool of your choice. You meet anything with Thieves' Tools. That'd be cool. The cleric who picks locks, all that stuff. Another interesting thing about the changelings is you automatically get common as a language, but you get two choices on top of that. And I assume that's to go along with the flavor that you're used to shifting between cultures and that, you know, you change into other races and stuff. So if you're a changeling, then you might know Elvish because you're around elves all the time and you change into elves a lot, or dwarves and so on and so forth. So the changelings are very interesting. They're good. I mean, I think most of the races of Eberron really have like a leg up on the base races just because they seem to get so much on top of what a base, or maybe it's just they're new and shiny. Even though they're not really new to D&D, they're new to 5th edition. So like, it's just exciting because they're like, ooh, new stuff. Yeah. So, the next race is the Kalishtar. So, I don't have much experience with them, so this is kind of brand new to me all around. But, so for your ability score increase, your wisdom and charisma both increase by one, and then you get to choose an ability score of your choice to increase by one, which is nice to go along with the whole human theme kind of thing, because the Kalishtar, from what I understand, are humans that have melded with a spirit or something like that. So you get the ability Dual Mind. When you make a wisdom saving throw, you can use your reaction to gain advantage on the roll. You can use this trait immediately before or after you roll, but before any of the roll's effects occur. So you basically, you know, get advantage on wisdom saving throws. And it's a reaction, so it's not like one of those once per rest kind of things. You can do that all the time, you know, once per round of combat kind of thing. You also have mental discipline. You have resistance to psychic damage. So that's cool. I don't think there's a lot of psychic damage in the early levels, but in the later levels, that kind of screws a lot of people over, especially barbarians with the bear totem who are used to taking half damage from everything except psychic. So Kalishtar Barbarian would be ridiculously awesome. Now, the thing about them that gets me is their mind link ability. So this, you can speak telepathically to any creature you can see within 60 feet of you. The cool thing, you don't need to share language with the creature for it to understand your telepathic messages, but the creature must be able to understand at least one language or be telepathic itself. And then, as a bonus action, you can give that creature the ability to speak back to you until your next turn, telepathically. So that's pretty cool. That's one of those things that like you would think that would take a spell slot or like a magical item, and they're just given. So that's really awesome, especially since they can just do it right out of the box. And that'll make things so easy when you're like, you're in this boss fight and you have information that you want to tell, but you don't want the boss to hear it. And then you just, you know, like, I'm just going to telepathically send you this Care Bear stare, and then you'll know stuff. And that's cool. And then they also get one choice of the following skills: insight, intimidation, performance, or persuasion. So, and you have advantage on ability checks you make with that skill. So that's pretty cool. Especially if it's persuasion or intimidation. Because, you know, if you fail those rolls, those can go poorly. Another interesting ability that Kalishtar get is severed from dreams. So they sleep, but they don't connect to the plane of dreams as other creatures do. Instead, their minds draw from the memories of their otherworldly spirit while they sleep. As such, you're immune to magical spells and effects that require you to dream, like the dream spell, but not to spells
and effects that put you to sleep, like the sleep spell. So that's interesting, because it's not like the elves, you know, where they can't be charmed or put to sleep by magic. It's you can't be made to dream. So that's interesting. And then their language is the common language called Quarry, and another language of their choice. So that's cool. Kalishtar are interesting. Humans melded with a spirit of such. So that's cool. I can't say they're as exciting as changelings, but they're there. And they have a lot of interesting things they could do. And they have an interesting flavor, really, is what it is. Like, there's an interesting flavor to that race that just makes it different than what we've seen before. Up next, we have the Shifters. Now, the Shifters are interesting because they come in one of four varieties. So they have four different sub-races to go along with the Shifters. So all the Shifters get a 1 point increase to their dexterity scores as their starting ability score increase. They also all get dark vision. They also have keen senses, which gives them proficiency in their perception skill. So that's cool. Now their shifting ability is a bonus action. So as a bonus action, they can shift into their bestial appearance, which lasts for 1 minute or until they die. Or you can revert to your normal appearance anytime you want as a bonus action. So when you shift, you gain temporary hit points equal to your level plus your constitution modifier, minimum of 1. So even if your constitution is -1 and you're level 1, you'll still get 1 temporary hit point. And then you get additional benefits determined by your subrace. The thing about it, though, is once you shift, you can't shift again until you finish a short or a long rest. So it's you get one and done, and that's it. The language they all get is common. You can just speak, read, and write common and all that stuff. But now, on to the good stuff, the subraces. So the first subrace is the Beasthide. Their constitution score increases by 2. They also have proficiency with the athletic skill. Their shifting feature, whenever you shift, you gain 1d6 additional temporary hit points, and you have a +1 bonus to your AC. So that's very much the barbarian, fighter, dual-wielding, ranger, rogue, kind of, you know, combat-oriented shifter subrace. It's very cool. The second subrace is the Longtooth. Their strength increases by 2. They have proficiency with the intimidation skill. And while shifted, you can use your elongated fangs to make an unarmed strike as a bonus action. If you hit with your fangs, you can deal damage equal to 1d6 plus your strength modifier instead of the bludgeoning damage normal unarmed strikes do. So that's as a bonus action. So if you shift into this and you're using a weapon attack, you can do your weapon attack. And then as a bonus action, you get this on top. So very early on, you get 2 attacks. And 1d6 plus your strength modifier is not bad, especially for lower levels. So, you know, the Longtooths have a lot going for them. The third subrace is the Swift Stride. So their dexterity and charisma both increase by 1. Their proficiency in the acrobatics skill. Their walking speed increases by 5 feet. And their shifting ability. While shifted, your walking speed increases by an additional 5 feet. Additionally, you can move up to 10 feet as a reaction when an enemy ends its turn within 5 feet in front of you. So that is amazing for casters. For wizards, sorcerers, and all that stuff. Because it's going to keep you out of melee combat, you know, whenever it doesn't. Because the best thing about that is the movement doesn't provoke opportunity attacks because it's part of the class ability. And it says it doesn't provoke opportunity attacks. So that's great, especially, you know, a higher walking speed, dexterity, charisma,
going up by one. I mean, your dexterity already goes up by one, so it goes up by two. And so that's, yeah, the swift stride is definitely what I would use for a casting class if I had to make a shifter kind of thing. The last subrace is the Wild Hunt Shifters. So their wisdom score increases by two. They have proficiency with survival skill. And they have Mark the Scent. As a bonus action, you can mark one creature you can see within 10 feet of you. Until the end of your next long rest, your proficiency bonus is doubled for any ability check you make to find the marked creature. And you always know the location of the creature if it's within 60 feet of you. So that's pretty cool. That's definitely, you know, like the ranger ability. I mean, Wild Hunt also makes good clerics because their wisdom goes up by two. Kind of thing, but this is definitely geared toward the ranger kind of mentality or play. I mean, just playing the Wild Hunt Shifter can give you kind of a ranger sensibility playing any class, you know, cleric, wizard, sorcerer, whatever you want, because you just have those inborn built into your character. And their shifting feature, while you're shifted, you have advantage on wisdom checks. So all in all, the shifter class or race is nice. I mean, it's cool. It's like a mini lycanthrope. You don't completely turn into a werewolf or a werebear kind of thing. It's just, it's flavorful. And that's what I keep saying about these new races. It's just, there's so much more flavor, I feel like, in them than, you know, some of the other races that we've gotten, especially the base races. The shifters are just like, there's four different subraces that all lend themselves really well to certain character builds. And it's just cool. It's just interesting. I like it. And now on to what I think a lot of people are most excited for. I know Andy is over the moon that they've now officially been released. He's going to be making a new one for our Curse of Strahd game. And Karateka thinks he's working in really well because, you know, Barovia is kind of between planes and Strahd can pull you from wherever you are. So the Warforged still makes sense in this game, even though it's not exactly set in Eberron. So that's cool. But the Warforged, so they were constructs created for the war. Now that the war is over, they've been released because they are sentient creatures and, you know, like, what are you going to do with a bunch of war robots now? There's no war to fight. So they just like, go, figure it out. Go, be on your own. Go, get out of here. So that's the Warforged. Their ability score increases. Your constitution score increases by one. And there are two different kinds of Warforged that we'll get into later. So their race ability is Warforged Resilience. You are created to have remarkable fortitude represented by the following benefits. You have advantage on saving throws against being poisoned, and you have resistance to poison damage. 2, you are immune to disease. 3, you don't need to eat, drink, or breathe. And 4, you don't need to sleep, and don't suffer the effects of exhaustion due to lack of rest. And magic cannot put you to sleep. So, I mean, they never stop. They're like the Energizer Bunny. They just keep going and going and going. And that's what makes Warforged badass. So yeah. Those who have Sentry's Rest. When you take a long rest, you must spend at least 6 hours in an inactive, motionless state rather than sleeping. In this state, you appear inert, but it doesn't render you unconscious. So therefore, you can see and hear as normal. So, I mean, you have a Warforged in your party. That's your watch right there, because they're not unconscious. They can see and hear as normal. They're just kind of like powered down. Kind of thing. So, like, they're the ultimate, you know, watch guy. You know, like, oh, who wants to do watch? The Warforged always is going to do watch. Like, there's no reason for him not to, because he doesn't sleep. He just kind of powers down a little bit. But he's good. The interesting thing about Warforged that sets them apart from most other races is that no matter what class they are, they don't wear armor. So they don't get any benefit from wearing armor whatsoever. They can, of course, use a shield and still get the bonus from the shield, but their body changes
depending on their armor proficiency. So you can get upgraded as you were. So if you're a Warforged in the world of Eberron, and you start out as a wizard, let's say, and so you just have, you know, your unarmored Warforged form. So your armor class is just 11 plus your dexterity modifier, and then if you can use light armor, you add your proficiency bonus, and that's your armor class. That's it. And let's say you get medium armor proficiency. Well, now your armor class goes up to 13 plus your dexterity modifier with a maximum of 2 plus your proficiency bonus. And then let's say you got heavy armor proficiency. Now it is 16 plus your proficiency bonus. So that is the most a Warforged can get AC-wise from their armor plating kind of thing. 16 plus proficiency bonus with disadvantage on dexterity self-checks. So that's interesting because you're going to find, you know, that set of magical plate that would be perfect for your Warforged fighter, but it's going to go to the party to sell because you can't wear it because you're a Warforged. But I just thought that was interesting how they can change their armor plating depending on their armor proficiency, and that's it. Armor does nothing for them. But of course it makes sense because they're, you know, golems to an extent. So that's interesting. And of course they can read, speak, and write common. And then there's three Warforged subraces. My apologies. So the first one is Envoy. Their ability, they get to choose two different ability scores to increase by one. They also gain one skill proficiency of their choice, one tool proficiency of their choice, and a fluency in any one language of their choice. And then they have integrated tool. So their integrated tool is cool because it is integrated into their body, and they double their proficiency bonus for ability checks that they make with it. So let's say that we have a Warforged Envoy who is a bard. His lute can be integrated into his body. His arm could just turn into a lute that he could play, and then all the performance checks he makes with that lute, the proficiency bonus on those is doubled. So that's the Envoy, you know, like the ambassador, you know, the face Warforged. That, I mean, that exists. Hey, look, it's one of those things. The second subrace is Juggernaut. So these are the big war machines, you know, made for war. So their strength increases by 2. And then when they perform an unarmed strike, you deal 1d4 plus your strength modifier damage instead of the normal unarmed strike damage. And they also count as one size larger when determining their carrying capacity and the weight they can push, drag, or lift. So the same thing as Goliaths. They count as one size larger, you know, when weight and pushing, dragging, and lifting is involved. So that's cool because, I mean, they're war machines. And the last subrace for the Warforged is Skirmisher. So they're like the fast, darty Warforged. So their dexterity score increases by 2. Their walking speed increases by 5. And then when you're traveling alone for an extended period of time, an hour or more, you can move stealthily at normal pace. So that might not seem like a big deal, but when you are traveling and you have that, you know, ranger or rogue scattering ahead, it kind of slows everyone down because you can't travel at a normal pace while trying to be stealthy. You got to move at a slower pace, so it slows everything down. So having a Warforged, who is also a skirmisher, means they can stealthily scout ahead at a normal pace, which means travel time is reduced, if that's what you're into. So yeah, that's the Warforged. Warforged have always been one of my favorite races in the game, just because they're so interesting. Like, just the idea, you know, you were built for war, and now that war is no longer going on. Like, you have no purpose, and you're sentient. You know, you're a machine without meaning, and that can very well, you know, play into a very interesting character development, because You know, or maybe the Warforged is programmed some way. Maybe you can have your memory core wiped and you have no idea who made you or what made you, why you exist, stuff like that. Like, it can just lead down some very interesting character development paths. Now, for the rest of the races, the existing races, they do have sections in the Wayfinder's Guide to Eberron about how these races exist in the world, how people react to them, where they fit into the culture, and stuff like that. I'm not going to bore you to death going all over all of those this week. But I did want to point out some interesting elf variants. So there are two elf variants in Eberron. They're the Irani, and those elves can choose one skill or tool proficiency, and your proficiency bonus is doubled for any ability check you make with those using the chosen proficiency. I know I garbled that out and said it terribly or whatever. So let's say you are a druid and you take tool proficiency in thieves tools kind of thing. You now have proficiency in thieves tools, and on top of that, your proficiency bonus is doubled for that. Or you can choose a skill, intimidation, persuasion, all that stuff kind of thing. The elf variant that is actually exciting is the Valinar. So the Valinar elf gains proficiency with the scimitar, double scimitar, longbow, and shortbow. Now the double scimitar is interesting because it is a weapon that exists in Eberron that only Valinar are supposed to be able to use. So it's a cool weapon. You know, it's like Darth Maul's lightsaber, but a sword. And supposedly, if you were in the world and a Valinar elf sees you wielding a double scimitar and you are not a Valinar elf, say you're a dwarf or a human or something like that, that Valinar, as a code of honor, is supposed to drop everything and challenge you to a duel to see if you are worthy of wielding the double scimitar. Now, I know a lot of people aren't going to do that every time a Valinar elf shows up just because it, you know, would slow things down. But that's such an interesting dynamic, an interesting thing to put in the game. Like that little flavor text. If a Valinar sees you wielding a double scimitar and you are not, in fact, a Valinar, they have to duel you to see if you're worthy of wielding the weapon of the Valinar. That's just interesting to me. I don't care if it's not to you, okay? It just made sense to me. It seemed interesting. So yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in this book. I am over the moon excited. I cannot wait to run my new campaign, whenever that will be. So yeah. So I know this episode was short. I know it was weird. It was only me. You had to listen to me talk and stuff like that. But never fear, Karataka will be back next week, and it'll all be fine and wonderful, and I miss him. I miss him so much. Oh, my God. Anyway, so next week, we're going to be getting into the Dragon Marks. Dragon Marks are awesome. They're a special kind of thing that exists in Eberron. Different houses control different marks, and you can create Dragon Marked characters. And those marks give you special abilities. They take away some of your abilities from your race that you do. And it's just interesting. Like, the whole idea of the Dragon Mark system is certain races can have these marks put on them. And they give them abilities that the race usually wouldn't get. And they're controlled by houses. So there's a house that controls the mark of healing. And so pretty much any resurrection magic, because it is so rare, can only be performed by this house by a person with a mark of healing. It's just one of those things that, like, it adds so much drama and lore and depth to Eberron. It was already dripping with drama and lore and depth. So, yeah. So, next week, we're going to get into all the Dragon Marks. We're going to tell you all about them. We're going to tell you about creating Dragon Mark characters, the new background they put in Eberron, because there is a new background now available for Dragonmark characters called a House Agent. I will get into that next week. And then we'll talk about Sharn, the City of Towers. We'll talk about some other interesting places in Corvair that exist in Eberron. And last but not least, we will tell you the perfect way to start a new campaign in Eberron. I know, you can't wait. I can't wait either. So, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I know it was weird. I know I rambled and stumbled over my words because I used Karadok as a crutch, and he's not here. But we've done it. We've made it to the end. There we are. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, call this number. Just kidding. Email us, taverntussle@gmail.com. Of course, remember to follow us on Twitter, @taverntussle. We have a lot of interesting things happening in August. I cannot stress this enough. We have so many plans and so many things that we're going to do in August. And the only way for you to know about that is, of course, listen to us, but follow our Twitter. Because a lot of the stuff we're doing is going to be posted on Twitter before the weekly show every Wednesday. So just do me a favor, follow us. Like I said, reach out to us on an email if you wish to. But thank you very much for listening to me go over the new races of Eberron, because I'm super excited and I cannot wait. If you start a game in Eberron, tell me what kind of character you made using the new races, or even if you started using the Dragon Marks, like, let us know. I want to hear those things. You know, did you make a Warforged? Are you a shifter? Did you make a changeling who always walked around looking like Chuck Norris? Just let me know. So yeah, thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening to me this week. I will return next week with Karadoka. As always, I hope you have a wonderful week.